Hello, 6090 AM in Montreal.
A new Concordia student group is advocating to replace the school's major food service. Fed Up Concordia is a grassroots student organization which started in August before this school year. They are bringing attention to issues with Aramark, the largest food provider on Concordia's campus, and hoping to eventually have this service replaced. There have been different campaigns to replace Aramark over the years, but Fed Up Concordia is hoping to get the support of the student body through the upcoming student by-elections. The student by-elections are hosted by the Concordia Student Union. In addition to filling vacant seats on the union's executive, it is a chance for students to vote yes or no to various referendum questions, thus enabling the union to advocate for certain things, a sort of democratic and institutionalized petition. Here is Fed Up Concordia organizer Mia Kennedy reading the question being posed to the student body.
The referendum question is in three parts. The first one is trying to end exclusive contracts with multinational corporations on campus, so essentially not allowing corporations like Aramark to be the only ones able to serve food. The second one would be to support, enhance, and incubate local food initiatives, so that would include developing an alternative to Aramark, in addition to supporting other organizations on campus like Frigovaire, People's Potato, the Hive Cafe. And lastly, asking Concordia to implement a holistic food policy that includes strong commitments to social and environmental justice. So these are all values that already most students align with, and it's really important to get this passed because that way the Concordia Student Union, who's already really supportive of this, they're further empowered to advocate for these things when they're talking with the admin.
Fed Up Concordia began their campaign on Monday, November 11th of this year. They want to mobilize students around two central issues regarding Aramark. One is the quality of the food. There have been reports over the years of food being moldy, unsanitary, and poorly prepared from students. The other is Aramark's involvement in the prison industrial complex. Aramark is the largest food provider to U.S. private and public prisons. Here is another Fed Up organizer, Shyam Raghavan.
Our main goal is healthier choices and sustainable options in terms of food for all students on campus, and it also involves replacing companies with more ethical companies.
Neither Concordia nor Aramark responded to requests for comment. The Concordia student by-election campaign period lasts until November 18th. The polling of the student body lasts from November 19th to November 21st. For CJLO News and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
All right. The blue on the sea, loose and complete under sky, so smoky blue-green. I can't foresee a Dixie did she, so it danced the sidewalk clean. My memory is muddy, what's this river that I'm in? New Orleans is sinking, man, and I don't want to swim.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO, 1690 AM here in Montreal. And what a day we have for us here on November the 18th. Hope everyone is doing well. And we got a jam-packed show for you guys today. If this is your first time listening, the Tommy John Show, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, every single Monday here on CJLO, where we discuss everything going on in the world of sports. Hope everyone is doing well. What a show we have. We have huge news in the National Football League. We had the Grey Cup yesterday. huge fights over the weekends with that Mike Tyson Jake Paul fight, the John Jones fight in New York, NBA, NHL in full swing, we college football, we got it all covered here on the Tommy John Show. So do not change the channel. And if you're new, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, you name it. You can find the Tommy John Show. Give us a follow on there as well. So let's do a quick recap. We might as well start off with the Grey Cup because it was yesterday. And the Toronto Argonauts with a huge upset over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, 41-24. They really poured it on late with a pick six and almost another pick six late in the game. Zach Collaros, not his best day at the office for the Bombers. 4 interceptions and only 50% completion percentage. He did hurt his hand, which may have affected it, but still, doesn't matter. Brady Oliveira, not that effective for the Bombers. He only had 84 yards on 11 carries. It's still 8 yards a carry. It's pretty darn good, but you'd think they'd want to run the ball more with him. Still, a disappointing effort by Winnipeg, who were almost double-digit favorites coming into the game. It was their 5th Grey Cup in a row. They won the first two and now have lost the last 3. But the Argos, with a backup quarterback, Nick Arbuckle, win the Grey Cup. Good for Toronto, good for the Argonauts. And that concludes a pretty hectic CFL season. Hopefully our Alouettes get healthy next year, because when they lost Philpott, when they lost Mack, when they lost all these lethal weapons, they were not the same team, and hopefully they're back for next year. But yeah, great, great cup. Jonas Brothers halftime, what's not to like, right? So that will conclude the CFL until next summer. Can't wait for that to restart again. The CFL is great in the summer. You know, when we're craving football, we want college football, we want NFL. All right, we'll watch the CFL. And some of those early season games are awesome. And if you haven't been to an Alouettes game in the summer at Molson Stadium, it is truly great. On a summer night, get some friends, watch some good football. Always fun. That's when I really like the CFL. Unfortunately, when the NFL and college football come on TV, it's like, oh, the CFL kind of goes to the heads of the back burner, at least for me. But in the summertime, I love following it for a bit, see where the teams are at and going to a few games. So can't wait for that summer tradition to pick up again next year. Why don't we head to the NFL, ladies and gentlemen, where we had an unbelievable week. It started off with the huge division clash between the Eagles and the Commanders, and it was a close game, hanging in the balance for most of it, for 3 quarters, I would say. And then, man, in the 4th quarter, Saquon Barkley and the Eagles took off. He had a monster day. Monster day. 26 carries, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground, not to mention 2 catches for 52 yards in the pass game. He was a machine on Thursday night. Jalen Hurts, 18-28, 221, nothing special. Did have 39 rushing yards on the ground and a touchdown, but it was all about Saquon Barkley, A.J. Brown. A pretty good effort from Dallas Goedert, too. He popped off my screen a bit with big catches. Not the best game for Jaden Daniels. I know people are going to say, oh, 22 of 32, 191. If you watch that game, he was missing throws. He had a bad pick in the 4th quarter. And I don't know if he's fully healthy, if I'm being honest. He's not really pushing off with his throws. Not much power. I see when he plants the foot, he kind of winces when he throws. Not a lot of power coming through. So I think that rib injury is still affecting him a bit, because he did not look like the Jaden Daniels we've been accustomed to seeing over the last few weeks. He's been awesome, and to see that performance was a bit shocking. Austin Eckler, though, he really had a good day, 89 yards. But Washington, not done. 7-4. Wild card spot looks pretty likely. They got an easy schedule coming up, but that was huge for Philadelphia. They have a gauntlet coming up, and for them to have a 2-game lead in the East is huge. They have the Rams, Ravens, Steelers. Those are big games coming up for the Eagles, and for them to get a 2-game lead in the East is huge. So big win for Philadelphia. Yesterday, Miami over the Raiders, 34-19. Brock Bowers had a big day for the Raiders. Doesn't matter. The Dolphins now 4-6 and aren't done yet. That AFC is not as good when you get to the second. You have the 4 great teams in the AFC, and that's about it. So Miami still lurking at 4-6 for that last playoff spot. The Saints have won 2 in a row, 35-14. They hammer the Browns. The Colts, what a win that was, 28-27. Anthony Richardson looked unbelievable. And I can't believe I'm saying that, because he was so bad to start the year. They bench him for two games. He comes back 20 of 30. He was efficient, 272 and a touchdown. Not to mention he ran for two on the ground as well. Aaron Rodgers and the Jets, what a disaster. 3-8. 3-8. And I know these people are saying, oh, their schedule's easy down the stretch. They may be the worst team in the league, so I don't know why that affects them. Seattle, Miami, Jacksonville, they should win that one. Rams, Dolphins, Bills, I mean, they're probably going to go 5-12 this year. That's alarming. Just a terrible situation in New York. Minnesota, nice bounce back game for Sam Darnold. 23-13, they take down the Titans, and they are 8-2, cruising in that wild card position in the NFC. The Bears had the Packers on the ropes. They were there to be had. Jordan Love moves him down the field to with a great pass to Christian Watson. Gets him inside the five. They score to go up one. And to Caleb Williams' credit, they get rid of Shane Waldron. They got the pass game coordinator as the offensive coordinator now. Leads them down the field. Some huge plays on third down and fourth down. They get in field goal range. And the Packers block the game-winning kick to win 20-19. That's 2 weeks in a row now where inferior teams had a chance to knock off an elite team at the end, and the kicks are blocked. We had Denver last week against the Chiefs, now Green Bay this week. But I think the big storyline for Bears fans, they're going to be mad that they lost to the Packers. Caleb Williams looks like a different quarterback. He was getting on the move. He was hitting his receivers. He was 23 of 31, 231. Not to mention, he rushed. He ran for 70 yards. That's what made Caleb Williams the number one pick in the draft, is that he's great on the move, and when he has to, he can run with the ball. And he did that well. He looked like a much better quarterback without Shane Waldron calling the plays, so that should be promising for Bears fans. But they should have had that game. They'll be kicking themselves for losing that one. 20-19, the final there. The Lions, 52-6. Over the Jaguars. That was to be expected. That was the lock of the week. They're only favored by 13.5. Even if they're favored by 30.5, I would have taken the Lions. Destroys Jacksonville. Jared Goff, what a bounce back game for him. 4-12 and 4 touchdowns. He was 24 of 29. Big game for St. Brown. Big game for Montgomery. Big game for everyone on the Lions offense. They went crazy. Jacksonville, I mean, Doug Peterson's. We're waiting for that firing notice. Any two seconds. Like, seriously, he was supposed to be fired a month ago, Doug Peterson. And now, what, they're going to ride it out, take him to the end of the year, and then fire him? Heard reports that maybe Belichick could go there. I don't know. We'll see. But that's a disaster. Mac Jones, turns out it wasn't the Patriots. He just stinks. 52-6, the final. The Patriots. And the Rams played a pretty good game yesterday. That was highly entertaining. A lot of back and forth. Matt Stafford was great. He had 4 touchdowns and 295 yards. Drake May, the rookie, played sensational. 75% completion percentage. He was 30 of 40. 282 yards, 2 touchdowns. That bad pick at the end, it looked like it was miscommunication between him and Pop Douglas. Unfortunately for me and the Patriots fans, we lose another one. We're down to 3-8, but the sole purpose of this year, like I've been saying on this program, was make sure Drake May can play. And Drake May can play. There is no way around that. You cannot say otherwise. He can play. Now, the offseason and the draft is on expanding that offensive playbook and getting some talent. Because a lot of the time, it's very basic, run up the middle, all that stuff. Hopefully, Alex Van Pelt in the offseason can dial up some more plays, think about it, sit down with Drake May, and address the O-line and wide receiver position. Because there's a lot of drops. Again, Kayshon Boutte and those guys got to be better. But 28-22, the Rams all of a sudden are 5-5. And then that NFC West was just such a logjam, are right in the thick of things. The maybe the best game of the 1 o'clock window, the Steelers hosting the Ravens, 18-16. Pittsburgh gets it done behind their tremendous defense. They were awesome. The Steelers didn't even score a damn touchdown. 6 field goals, they win the game. A costly Russell Wilson interception, though, late. They really could have put that one away if it wasn't for that terrible pick in the end zone. But they're resilient. I know Baltimore goes down and scores, but the 2-point play, they were on it. Big win for the Steelers, 18-16, the final. Speaking of the NFC West, Seattle with a stunner against the healthy San Francisco 49ers, 20-17. Geno Smith with the game-winning rushing touchdown late in that one. And now the Niners are 5-5, Seattle's 5-5, the Rams are 5-5, and the Arizona Cardinals are 6-4, who had a bye this week. And they must have loved seeing that. Just everyone logjammed together. The Cardinals are like, hey, with that win, we're sole position of first place. That's great. Good for the Cardinals. No one saw that coming. They are sitting at home, and they went from a tie from first to first place. So good for the Arizona Cardinals. But that is such a logjam now. I don't know. All through four of them have a legit chance of winning that division. I wrote Seattle off. I said they're done. They started off 3-0. They've been brutal down the stretch. They lost to the Giants, for crying out loud. And now, with two games against Arizona down the stretch, they have the Jets on that schedule. They have the Bears on that schedule. They got some winnable games. Seattle's in it. And San Francisco, we all say they're so talented, great, they'll be fine. They have a brutal schedule. They got Green Bay, Buffalo, Detroit, Arizona. That's a tough schedule down the stretch for the 49ers. So it's going to come down to week 18. And those head-to-head divisional matchups are going to be huge. But right now, it's Arizona leading the way at 6-4 with a group of 5-5 teams behind them. What a day for Bo Nix and the Broncos. 38-6, they rout the Falcons. What a day for him. 28-33, 307 yards, 4 touchdowns. What a performance from Bo Nix. Sean Payton is working wonders with that kid. Buffalo ending the Chiefs' perfect season. 30-21. That was a terrific football game. Josh Allen. Everyone's going to talk about Josh Allen and that fourth down play. He was stellar the whole afternoon. When they needed big plays, apart from that bad pick on fourth down in the first half, he was tremendous. We're all going to highlight fourth and two. They went for it instead of kicking the field goal, and it works for them. But we have to give credit to that Bills defense. They picked off Mahomes twice, and they were just sturdy. A lot of injuries on that defense, and there was a lot of injuries on the offense too, but that defense is banged up, and they played great, forced Mahomes to throw the ball off schedule and off time, and it worked out for them. And that's got to give them a lot of confidence. They've had their number in the regular season. I think this is four times now Josh Allen has beaten Mahomes in the regular season, and we all know the story in the postseason, but still, banged up team, no Dalton Kincaid at tight end, no Keon Coleman, two of their better offensive threats, and they still went out there and put 30 on an elite defense. That's the first time I think the Chiefs have allowed 30 in like almost 2 years. So that was huge for the Bills. They moved to 9-2. The Chiefs fall to 9-1. And now if the Chiefs slip up again, Buffalo with a bye next week would be the one seed in the AFC. The last game last night, what a game it was. The Chargers outlast Burrow and the Bengals 34-27. What a game. It was looking like it was going to be a rout in the first half. The Chargers were scoring at will. They had a 24-6 lead at halftime, but credit Burrow and the Bengals. They came back, were resilient. The defense made stops, and that game was hanging in the balance in the fourth quarter. Two huge misses from Evan McPherson. I think one was from 51. The other one was from 48, I think, around there. That should have been the ball game if he hits those two kicks. But no, Herbert and the Chargers bounce back on that drive. Ladd McConkey, two huge catches. He had a monster game, 6 for 123. And they got in range. J.K. Dobbins runs in the game-winning touchdown. That's all she wrote. The Chargers are now 7-3. And what a job Jim Harbaugh has done there. The Bengals, man, 4-7. They really have to run the table. 10 wins should get you in. But you look at that schedule. They got the Steelers in 2 weeks. They got the bye, then the Steelers, Dallas, Tennessee, Cleveland, Denver, and the Steelers. So, I don't know. There's some easy games. They're going to beat Cleveland at home. They're going to beat Dallas. They're going to beat Tennessee. It's those three games. Those are three wins. So that gets them right now to 7-7. They have to win those three other games. Two against the Steelers and at home against Denver, especially since you're trying to catch up to Denver. They got to win those games. If they don't, they're toast. But if they win those games, like, we keep doing this with the Bengals. They're the only team we do this with. But their schedule is so easy down the stretch with those three games. But they can't lose. They got to win out. 9-8, I don't think gets them in, considering that the Broncos are already at 6. You got to get the 10 and win the head-to-head with Denver. You do that, you're in. They've done it before, but they really have to go on a run here. Really, they're out of lives. This is it. Their last go if you're the 2024 Bengals. Let's see what they can do. Big bye coming up. I think it comes at a good time for them. And then they can attack the rest of that schedule to see if they can make a push for the playoffs. Tonight we have a battle, the Battle of Texas with the Texans and the Cowboys. 8:15 start. Should be a good game there. I believe Nico Collins will be back for that one. The big story, Daniel Jones, now the third string quarterback in New York. The Giants decide to bench him and put him as a third stringer. Drew Locke will be the backup. And Tommy DeVito will start for the New York Giants next week and as they host the Buccaneers. And that's going to be a great football game. And oh, why? Because the Giant fans are going to come out and think Tommy DeVito can save the day, which I think is going to be very funny. I cannot wait to watch that game. Tampa Bay has a lot to play for. They're trying to salvage their season, especially with Atlanta faltering the last 2 weeks. And then you're going to have the Giants with all that momentum with Tommy DeVito. I'm going to be glued to that game. I think it's going to be awesome. But yeah, great, great game that next weekend. But Daniel Jones, we're going to get into that story in the next few minutes. What a fall from grace. They gave him the $140 million contract. They don't sign Saquon Barkley because of it. Saquon Barkley might win Offensive Player of the Year. And now Daniel Jones is a third-string quarterback. Just ridiculous. We get to the NHL quickly. The Florida Panthers leading the Atlantic with 25 points. The Leafs on 24 points. The Bruins and Lightning both on 19 points. The Canadiens host the Oilers and McDavid tonight, 7:30 p.m. puck drop on Amazon Prime, which should be fun. They had a big win on Saturday, 5-1, with a big performance from Armia Caulfield and goalie Sam Montembeau, who's terrific in the win. If you head out to the Western Conference and it's the Winnipeg Jets and everyone else, I know they've lost two in a row, but they are 15-3, which is unbelievable. That's what happens. You get off to these quick starts, you're allowed to have these games where you can slip back and relax. I know they're mad that they got blown out both games in Florida this weekend, but it's a long road trip. They're 15-3. They're cruising. I forgot to mention the Metropolitan Division. Carolina, New Jersey, Washington, and the Rangers all cruising. That division's loaded. Those are four legit threats. Washington's really the story of the league, I think, in the Eastern Conference. You have Ovechkin with a hat trick last night, just getting closer and closer to passing Gretzky. I thought he'd do it next year, just based on his trajectory of his career. He was slowing down. He's been awesome. He sees the goal record in sight, and he is going for it. He is ripping goals like there's no tomorrow. Three more for him yesterday. Washington, who no one thought would do anything this year, been one of the better stories. Dylan Strome's been awesome. They're just happy to see Washington playing well. Yet to the Pacific, Vegas leading the way with the Kings, Canucks who follow. Edmonton sitting on 20 points with a win tonight against Montreal. They would leapfrog Vancouver and Calgary to 22 points and third in the Pacific. Quickly to the NBA, and the Cleveland Cavaliers keep on winning. Donovan Mitchell didn't even play last night. 15-0 they are. They are on fire. They have a 3.5-game lead on the Celtics in the Eastern Conference. And tomorrow, guess what they're playing? At Boston. Will it continue? Will it go to 16-0, or will the defending champions finally hand the Cavs their first loss of the season? We will find out. We head to the Western Conference, and Golden State keeps on winning. They've won 3 in a row, and they sit atop of the West at 10-2. The Thunder at 11-3. What a job Ime Udoka and the Rockets are doing, eh? My goodness, they are third right now in the Western Conference, and no one had that on their predictions. I can tell you that. They've been just brutal for so many years now, the Rockets. Since Harden left, since Chris Paul left, since all those guys left, it's been a tough watch in Houston, but they've won 5 in a row, 10-4. They're third in the Western Conference. The LA Lakers, 9-4, have won 5 in a row, sit in fourth. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul, will briefly talk on that. That was a snooze fest. Jake Paul winning on points. Can't believe I spent the majority of my Friday night watching that card. There were some great fights on the card. Don't get me wrong, that ladies' fight beforehand was awesome, but that main event was shockingly bad. Shockingly bad. I knew Mike Tyson was 58 years old. I knew he was slowing down, but my God, can you throw a punch? Can you just throw? My goodness, disappointing card that was. And finally, UFC 309 over the weekend. John Jones knocks out Stipe Miocic with a spinning back kick to the, I don't even know, it was like a liver shot, I guess. That's where it was on the body. Huge win for John Jones. He is now 28-1 and won no contest. And now everyone's going to want him to fight Tom Aspinall. We'll see if that happens. But what a card that was over the weekend. That Oliveira-Chandler fight was sick. Really, really good card. Finally, Colorado in college football. They improve to 8-2 with a 49-24 win over the Utah Utes. The biggest scoreline of the weekend was definitely BYU losing to Kansas. They're the number 6 team in the country at home under the lights, and the Kansas Jayhawks, who are just trying to stay alive for a bowl game, knock off the Cougars 17-13. And that's going to shake things up for sure. I know BYU fans are still optimistic. You win the Big 12, you're probably going to play Colorado in that game. You win that game, you make the playoff, you get a bye. I understand that. But still, that's a heartbreaking loss. Now there's no room for error. No room for error. Georgia beats the Tennessee Volunteers 31-17. Carson Beck had a big bounce back game. He's struggling as of late, but he was awesome. 347 yards, 2 touchdowns for him. As the Georgia Bulldogs now, who everyone was writing off with that big win against Tennessee, are right back in the thick of things in the SEC, which is the most log-jammed conference I've ever seen. You have Texas at 9-1, 5-1 in the conference. Then you have Texas A&M, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Ole Miss, all at 8-2, with 2 losses in the division. Texas A&M right now have 1 loss in the conference. But guess what? They play Texas coming up. So it's a total disaster in the SEC right now on who will make the SEC championship game. If Texas win out, they're in. And it's who's going to follow them. That's really what it comes down to. You could really have 1, 2, 3, 4. You could have 5 teams in the playoffs from the SEC. It's that good. Ole Miss is great. Alabama's great. Tennessee's good. Georgia's great. If A&M win the SEC, they're going. And then you have Texas, who's going to go up to what, number? I guess they'll say number 3 in the country. But it's a disaster right now. The rankings come out tomorrow, and I cannot wait to see where everything's ranked. I wonder if Oregon slips. I don't think so, because Oregon almost lost to Wisconsin 16-13 over the weekend. That would have been a disaster if they lost that one. But it's really coming down to the wire in college football. To see this 12-team playoff makes it so interesting. We were at the 4-team playoff. Georgia be out. Bama be out. All those teams would be out. It'd be Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, and pick your poison at 4. Penn State, one of those schools, would be the 4th. And we'd be done. That'd be it. With the 12-team payoff and the bye and conference championships meaning something, it's just so much better. It really is so much better. So we're going to take our first break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what the hell is happening in New York with the New York Giants, as well as who do I like out of the SEC in college football. We'll address all of this over the next hour here on the Tommy John Show. After a quick word from our sponsors, do not go away. We're having some technical difficulties back here on the Tommy John Show. Man, what a week in the NFL. And we're going to have a bunch of storylines. We're going to have a whole bunch of different narratives from this week. We had the Chiefs finally losing. We had Detroit with a huge statement. I know it was against the Jags, but when you put 52 points on an NFL team, you're doing something right. And we have the Steelers winning. But we really have to address what's going on with the 49ers. We have to. They're 5-5 now. Just lost to Seattle. They are a mess. And if it wasn't for a miraculous drive at the end of the game against Tampa Bay, they'd be 4-6. They really have not impressed me. Like the 49ers, as great as they've been over the last few years, have been disappointing. Yes, they've gone to, what, 3 NFC Championship games under Kyle Shanahan? Maybe 4, I think 3. Been the 2 Super Bowls, you could argue. They should have won those 2 Super Bowls. They let those leads slip away. I understand that. But this is a terrible, terrible situation right now. And I might be overreacting. They're 5-5. That division is all logjammed together, and it is very possible the Niners wake up and win down the stretch, win the West, host a playoff game, and they're on their way. Entirely possible. But it doesn't mean that they aren't flawed and have been flawed for a while now. What is with them and losing games in the fourth quarter? I've never seen anything like it. It is staggering. I could not believe it. Like week, what, 3 against the Rams. They're up 2 scores in the fourth quarter. They let the Rams come back and win the ball game. Okay, that happens. A few weeks later against the Cardinals, they're cruising in that game. Everyone's like, oh yeah, the 49ers are back. They're cruising. And then they vomit all over themselves. Arizona score 11 points in the fourth quarter. They win the ball game. And then yesterday, they had Seattle beat. And I know people are going to talk about, well, Bosa got injured. That changed the game. Fair enough. But still, you got to win that game. You cannot let Geno Smith and the Seattle Seahawks, who are heading in the wrong direction. They just lost to the Rams, got killed by the Bills. You can't let that happen. You cannot let that happen. And on that play, to let Geno Smith beat you with his legs to the end zone is unacceptable. And here we are, because of that, in a game where they could have just killed Seattle. Seattle would have been done. It would have been 0-2 against San Francisco. It would be at 4-6. It would have been 2 back of Arizona, 2 back of San Francisco. The Seattle could have been done. Yet, the 49ers, end of a game, not closing it out, have put themselves in a bad position and has elevated Seattle back into the mix. And you look at in the division, who have they lost to now? They've lost to Seattle. They've lost to the Rams. And they lost to Arizona. They have no head-to-head matchups right now. No wins. Their one win was, what, against Seattle a few weeks ago, and they just beat you yesterday. So that's nullified. You have no head-to-head wins in your division anymore. And think about that. And you had double-digit leads in all of those games. Against the Rams, against the Cardinals, and you blow the leads. They had the lead in the Super Bowl last year. Blew that one. Had the lead against the Rams in the NFC Championship game a few years ago. Up 2 scores. Blew that one. We're going to talk about the Jimmy Garoppolo Super Bowl too. Up 2 scores in the fourth quarter. Blew that one. This is a theme with Kyle Shanahan teams. And I love Kyle Shanahan. I think he's one of the best coaches in the league. He's an unbelievable game manager. He schemes up amazing run plays. I think the world of Kyle Shanahan as an offensive mind. But to say that sometimes he gets a bit pass happy or falls in love with his play calling just a little bit down the stretch, it's true. You should be blowing out teams like Seattle. Everyone's going to tell me Seattle's 5-5. They've got blown out by Buffalo. They lose to the Giants at home. They lose to the Rams in overtime at home. They're not a good football team. They're a fine football team, Seattle. They're not a good football team. And the Niners, who finally get McCaffrey back last week and get Juwan Jennings back and start getting all the bodies back, and everyone's like, here we go, the push for the playoffs. To lose to Seattle at home is inexcusable. If you asked me for the week, what are my two locks going in? I would have said Detroit, obviously. And I would have said, you know what? I think San Francisco is going to smoke Seattle. McCaffrey's back. They got the two running backs with him now and Mason. Juwan Jennings is back. I know Kittle's out, but still, that should be enough to beat Seattle and Geno Smith. Apparently not. Apparently not. Listen, they're not done yet, but I'm hitting the panic button. I hit the panic button a few weeks ago with Cincinnati. I'm hitting it again now with San Francisco. I cannot just say, oh, it was an off week. It's an off week, but they'll get it together. Now their backs up against the wall. They are fully up against the wall. They're a game back of Arizona. Technically a game and a half back because you lost the head-to-head. I know you play them again. But your division's a logjam. Rams are 5-5. You're 5-5. Seattle's 5-5. Arizona's 6-4. This is the home stretch. American Thanksgiving's in a few weeks. It's the push to the playoffs now for San Francisco. No more slip-ups. No more fourth-quarter leads. No more boneheaded Brock Purdy interceptions, which he's usually been pretty good at. We just can't have no more of those. Just play within the offense. Don't turn the ball over and you'll win a lot of games. That's been the game plan for San Francisco. It's been the game plan for successful teams. Kansas City, Buffalo. But for some reason, in these games where they should hammer teams, they do that. I cannot believe, having Geno Smith rip you apart is just, that's just a killer loss. You win that game, you're 6-4, you're cruising. 1-2 in a row, you can say we're back, McCaffrey's back, we're back to our winning ways. That's just a bad loss. And it's going to leave a bad taste in 49ers fans' mouths. For sure. No two ways around it. No two ways around it. Really bad. That's a really, really bad loss for San Francisco. I don't know if they'll turn it around. The Tommy of a few weeks ago would be like, I think they turn it around. I think they change. I think. No. No. Not. I've seen too much now. This is 10 games. If this was week 6, week 5, be like, guys, it's the 49ers. It's Kyle Shanahan. Let's pump the brakes a bit. And I was saying that. Not anymore. We're week, 10, 11? No, that was week 11. No more. No more fourth quarter leads. No more bad divisional losses at home. No more. You can't afford them anymore. You had a bad loss against Seattle at home. Bad loss against Arizona at home. You cannot lose to the Rams at home in a few weeks. You can't lose any of these divisional games coming up. Not to mention you have to play Buffalo coming up and a few other tough games. There's no more fourth quarter choke jobs from the 49ers. There can't be any more. Play your game and you should be fine. And I can't believe I'm saying this about usually such a well-coached team, such a talented team, and such an experienced team. They've been to 2 Super Bowls, this group. They've been to 3 to 4 NFC Championship games. And they're having this happen to them this year. Crazy. They're in deep, deep trouble. Deep trouble. They got to fix it. They really do. What I'm really, really excited to talk about now is Daniel Jones being now the 3rd-string quarterback in New York City with the Giants or New Jersey, that area. And like most of you, I think the clip of, I think it was the off-season Hard Knocks, was it not? It was, they had the Hard Knocks first right for the regular season. A few years ago, they did the Colts in-season. Now they want to do the off-season one, right, with the Giants. They did with the Giants, the draft season, the free agency period. And I just think of the Joe Shane clip where he's just talking about, oh, Saquon, how he just didn't want Saquon. We weren't going to go to that point with Saquon. That's, and then when Mara, the owner, walks into his office and says, what's the news on Saquon? He's like, oh, here, Philadelphia and Chicago are battling over price. I think everyone knows the clip I'm talking about. It's been everywhere. It has millions and millions of views. And that smug look on his face where Mara's like, I would just hate to see him go to Philadelphia. And Joe Shane has like that smirk on his face. Well, I would not want to be Joe Shane today. I bet that smirk is no longer on his face today. Because Brian Daboll and him are the same guys who decided, you know what? Daniel Jones had one good playoff game against a brutal Vikings defense a few years ago. Let's make him the, I don't know, what, eighth, seventh highest quarterback? I've heard he was at the time. Let's give him a top 10 quarterback salary in the NFL. Even though we've seen past performances from Daniel Jones where he's been nothing short of terrible. Nothing short. But oh, but he had a good play. Oh, he had a decent run with Brian Daboll. They had one good year. They won 9 games, mostly because Saquon was running his tail off. Let's lock up Daniel Jones and then kick the Saquon Barkley contract situation down the road. Let's kick the can down the road. Then they ultimately come to the decision after seeing Daniel Jones play poorly to not sign Saquon Barkley. Say, you know what? No. Let's not do it. And I know they're going to tell me this Tracy kid's all world, the rookie, didn't want to give Saquon $15 million a year. They could spin it any way they want. They messed up. They so messed up, screwed this whole thing up. And I like Brian Daboll as a coach. I think Shane's a brutal general manager. I always thought so. But I like Brian Daboll. He did great work with Josh Allen in Buffalo. That first year in New York, they were what, no business winning 9 games. They won 9 games in a playoff game. He won Coach of the Year. I love Brian Daboll as head football coach. Joe Shane, I think, stinks. But all I'm going to say is they deserve this, the Giants. You had a large sample size of Daniel Jones pre-Brian Daboll of him being god-awful. And yet, he had one good year or one good stretch of games. They didn't, not like they went 12-5 or 14-3. No, they were like 9-7-1. They weren't lighting the world on fire. They won one playoff game at Minnesota where Jones played well, and that warrants you giving a guy $140 million, $160 million, forget the exact total, but it was $40 million a year. I think it was 140. I forgot. I think it was 160 by 4. I think that's what it was. Whatever it was obnoxious. And I see the post today, right now, currently sitting right now, Daniel Jones has made over $108 million. Over $108 million. And to think a guy who's been so bad for so long has been a starter for 6 years? How is that even possible? Bryce Young got, what, a year and a bit, and they kicked him to the curb, and now he's back. But they were giving up on him. Anthony Richardson got, what, a year and a bit? Like, Daniel Jones got 6 and then had one decent stretch and got a 4-year contract extension. What are we doing in New York? And now, Tommy DeVito, I mean, it's a cool story. He's the local kid. Everyone wants him to do well. Everyone does the Sopranos impressions around him. It's great. But he's not the long-term answer at quarterback for the New York Giants. He isn't. It is going to be in the draft. Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward. I'm not as big on Beck as other people, but fair enough. You want to throw him into the mix. They have to find a quarterback they love and draft him. And to their credit, they liked Drake May last year. They loved Drake May. They loved Drake May so much so that they offered the Patriots a terrible trade to move up. Like, what are we doing? And it's really bad in New York. The defense is good. I like Burns. Who doesn't like Lawrence? But it's bad. And it mostly due to the quarterback play. They lost to the Panthers in Germany last week. Tommy DeVito starting now in New York. Daniel Jones is not even the backup. He's the third string quarterback. He is QB3 in New York. Not one, not two, not three. Will he even dress? So this is it with Daniel Jones. This is it. Last year in New York. It should be his last year in the NFL. Someone will sign him to be a backup. But it is Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, Quinn Ewers. I don't know what other quarterbacks are going to declare. You know, I think Beck's going to declare. It's going to be one of those guys, and they're going to go from there. And that's the only way out of this if you're the New York Giants. It's the only way out. No other way. They messed this up royally. They let their star player go to their arch rival. And he's looking like prime Barry Sanders is probably going to win Offensive Player of the Year if he continues at this rate. And you're stuck with Daniel Jones as your third string quarterback. How messed up is that? And it's just hanging over them, this whole Saquon thing. Still, Saquon Barkley could have went for his career high against you guys. He pulled himself out of the game. He spared you. He could have went for way more. Then to see him on Thursday night take the game over in the fourth quarter, it's got to be brutal if you're a Giants fan. Brutal. Saquon's your guy. Saquon Barkley is your guy. You drafted him second overall. He was by far your most popular player. He was by far your best offensive player. And now he's second in the league in rushing yards, fifth in touchdown, fifth rushing touchdowns. He has a whole boatload of receiving touchdowns. He's going to be an all-pro this year. In his first year, not on the Miami Dolphins or the Denver Broncos or an AFC team, not even an NFC West team like the Arizona Cardinals, not even the Atlanta Falcons. He is doing it on the Philadelphia Eagles, your arch rival. And you just let him have him for, what, a few million bucks here and there? At the expense of Daniel Jones? It is such a disaster how they manage that situation. If you polled any GM, not just GM, people who watched the NFL 2 years ago and said, hey, do you extend Daniel Jones first or Saquon Barkley? Anyone with a brain says you extend Saquon Barkley. Who has Saquon Barkley was the second pick in the draft as a running back. One of the generational prospects ever coming out of Penn State. We all knew what Saquon Barkley was, and injuries ruined his career earlier on. But the last few years in New York, he was starting to blossom into that elite running back. And they let him go. For nothing. To the Philadelphia Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles. Unbelievable. Now, I like Dable a lot. I'd keep Brian Dable. I think it'd be good for a new young quarterback. Joe Shane can go. I've had enough of him. That Hard Knocks made him look like an idiot. And then his son sitting in the office, and then he's like, who should we take? And he said, you should trade up and get Jane Daniels. And if you can't do that, draft Drake May. That's literally what the kid said. And the dad's like, why? He's like, well, if you get this job once, go all in. Even his kid's a better GM than he is. The kid's like 14 years old. And Joe Shane has messed this whole thing up. Don't pay a running back. Don't pay a running back. I understand that. But sometimes there's just obvious scenarios when you do. You pay Derrick Henry. You pay Christian McCaffrey. You pay Saquon Barkley. Because those, though, I know you say, oh, you can get a good running back in the fourth round. You can't get a Saquon Barkley in the fourth round, Joe Shane. You can't. And it's not like you're a pick between him and you have Josh Allen, Justin Herbert on your roster. You got to pick one of them. It was him or Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones, who had a nice playoff game, and they were 9-7-1. and you gave him a fortune, and then you move your all-pro running back out the door. It is such a disaster in New York, and they got to just start over on the offensive side. I don't mind this move at all. At least they admit, okay, we were wrong, and go from there. It's Shadur or Cam Ward going to the Giants next year. And that's it. There's no patchwork needed. Don't go get a Kirk Cousins if Atlanta decides to trade him and start panics. No more patchwork in New York. They got to draft their guy for the future. But you got to remember, Jones is not Dable's guy. Brian Dable has to handpick his guy. And whether it's Shadur, whether it's Cam Ward, it's a hell of a lot better than this version of Daniel Jones. I can assure you that. So we quickly mentioned the SEC earlier, Southeastern Conference, and how it's such a logjam and such a disaster right now that I don't know who the hell is going to make the SEC championship game. It's easy on the Texas front. We know Texas, if they win out, are going. They only have one loss in the conference to Georgia. They have one loss overall. If they went out, go 11-1, they're going to the SEC championship game. But then when you look down the line, it is really, really a disaster. Like, really a disaster. You have Georgia, Ole Miss, Alabama, Tennessee. I mean, the list goes on and on of teams that are just logjam stuck together. And this is where it gets funny. Hypothetical. Let's play the hypothetical game. Everyone else wins out. A&M beats Texas last week of the year. You would have 10-2 Texas, 10-2 Texas A&M, 10-2 Georgia, 10-2 Tennessee, 10-2 Alabama, 10-2 Ole Miss. But Tommy, we have head-to-head matchups. Well, okay. In this scenario, Texas A&M would have beaten Texas. Georgia would have beaten Alabama. Well, my bad. Alabama would have beaten Georgia. Tennessee would have beaten Alabama. Georgia would have beaten Tennessee. What are we doing here? Everyone's beating each other. And it looks like Ole Miss is going to get the short end of the stick here for playing for the SEC, but they're going to make the playoff if they go 10-2 right now. They're already in. They have a great win against Georgia. They hammered Georgia. And with BYU losing this weekend, they're going to move up, what, at least another spot? So now they're going to be, what, 10th in the country, 9-10 in the country? They're not going anywhere. Theoretically, if this were to happen, you could have 5-6 teams from the SEC in. Or it's going to be brutal to leave one of them out. Think about it. The winner of the SEC gets a bye. They're in. Then you're going to have A&M in this scenario where A&M beats Texas. You're going to have A&M, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama. Those five pretty much in, and Ole Miss. Six. I'm sorry, but then I guess Penn State's going to make it. Notre Dame's going to make it. Then you have to take the out of conference. Someone of this group is going to be left out. And personally, me, who I think it's going to be is Tennessee. Probably Texas is going to beat A&M. Let's be honest. If that happens, then you can get A&M out. They have three losses. That leaves room for someone. But think about it. You have your four byes. Those are four spots gone. You're down to eight. The non-power four champion takes one spot. You're down to seven. Then you're going to have Georgia. Let's say Texas wins the SEC. You're going to have Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, A&M, Tennessee. What do you do? I don't know. That game with A&M and Texas is so huge. If Texas wins, it just makes it so simple. And I like A&M, and I'm a Notre Dame fan, and Notre Dame beat A&M, so if A&M makes the playoff, it looks better for Notre Dame, helps our ranking. But if Texas wins, it just makes it easier. Because then Texas goes, A&M will have three losses, and then you go down the line. And then, yes, it's a gong show from there between Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, Ole Miss. But worst case scenario, you can take all those teams to the playoff. And still have room for your Penn State and your one other school. That's fine. That's fine. If Texas wins, the reason all I'm saying is, if Texas A&M wins in a few weeks against Texas, it will be the biggest cluster you know what of all time. Everyone's 10-2, everyone's 8-2, everyone's beaten everybody, and it's a disaster. An absolute disaster. And this is where maybe having the East and West would have been better still for this year. Because now it's just one giant conference, and you're taking the two best teams. And you get better games each week. I don't understand that. But you have teams now losing one, two, three games a year, and everyone's doing that. Everyone's beating each other. And you have this disaster. If there's an East and West, at least you take the best team in the East, best team in the West, okay. We go from there. With all of them in one giant conference, it's an absolute disaster. But I can't wait for the stretch. I cannot wait for this final stretch of college football. It's going to be awesome. Going to be awesome. So I quickly wanted to touch on what the hell is happening over with the Montreal Canadiens. We have to talk about the Canadiens once in a while in this program. We're going to right now. So they get the big win on Saturday against Columbus. And that was the best they've looked in a long time. That stretch they were on, they got blown out by the Rangers and blown out by Seattle and blown out by Washington. Then you lose to Pittsburgh and Calgary, New Jersey, Toronto, Minnesota. It just like it never ends. And you think, how can we improve? Saturday, that was an improvement. Saturday, that looked like an improvement, and it seems to be getting slightly better. 5-1 at home. I know it's one win, but they looked like a hockey team finally for the first time in a long time. And I understand people are getting frustrated. It'll be calm. This team wasn't going anywhere this year. Just limit the blowouts is my name of the game today. Limit the blowouts. I don't want to see no 8-2s anymore. I don't want to see no 6-2s, 5-1s. No. At least go down fighting and be good defensively. That was their problem this year. They were just so out of position, brutal turnovers. And that happens when you're working in new young players, haven't played much in the league, like Lane Hudson, Struble, guys like that. They just don't have a bunch of games in them. But it looks like it's getting better. And tonight is a huge test. They have McDavid, Draisaitl, and the Oilers in town. That's going to be a big test for Montreal on Amazon. If they can just limit the turnovers, no stupid penalties, and get that lethal power play on the ice. Just do that. Can you do that, Montreal, for one afternoon or one evening? No dumb penalties. If they do that, then they should be pretty competitive in this hockey game because Edmonton's going through their pains as well. McDavid got his 1,000th point the other night. I know everyone's like, yeah, the Oilers are back. I'm not sold that they're back yet. They lost to Toronto Saturday. Nashville's a brutal team. They barely won that one. They barely beat the Islanders. I'm not saying Edmonton's not going to get back and rolling here in a bit, but if there's a time the Oilers were vulnerable, this is a time. And if Marty St. Louis wants to turn this season around a bit, not saying make the playoffs, but put a good product on the ice, I think it starts tonight and these next two games. You got Edmonton, you got Vegas, you got two of the better teams in the NHL at home. There's going to be a buzz in the building. Put a good performance out there. Not saying you win the game, but can you play hard for 60 minutes and not get destroyed 6-1, 7-2? Because if Edmonton and Vegas score early this week and get 2-0, 3-0, we see what happens. It's like they mail it in. Can they be competitive for three periods? That's my homework for the Canadians tonight. Thank you all for listening. I'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern on CJLO 1690 AM. Thank you so much, and I'll speak to you all next week.